Alrighty, hello again, everyone, and welcome to it. It is the Derek Hunter Podcast for the 22nd of April, 2024. Happy Monday. Monday to you. Mondays suck, but we'll get through it together, shall we? Welcome to it. Don't forget to support the show, patreon.com/DerekHunterPodcast or DerekHunter.locals.com. Just like Sachin Kucheria, I'm hoping I didn't butcher that name, has. Thank you, Sachin. You are a hero. So thank you for supporting the show. Join Sachin Kucheria and support the program. Get the extra content. It just helps you get through the week, even though it happens on the weekends. That doesn't make any sense. I'm going to have to rethink that. But you get the idea. Let us get started. Thank you, Sachin. Let's get started so we can get going, so we can get to Tuesday faster. So in the news today, Israel has struck back against Iran. We knew it was coming. They knew it was coming. You ever get the sense that most of what goes on in the Middle East is kabuki theater? And you're not really sure. It's performance art, but you're not sure who the audience is. It certainly doesn't seem to be the other countries. It certainly doesn't. It seems to be for domestic consumption, but Iran is the one who needs the domestic consumption. So they launched, let's just say, 100 missiles toward Israel. They're all shot out, like one or two make it through. A lot of them are duds. It's just a humiliation on the world stage for Iran, which they kind of had to know would happen. They understand what Iron Dome is. They might not have one. They can't produce one, whatever. But they know what it is. They see what their little pets in Hamas do from Gaza and what Hezbollah does from southern Lebanon, and there's nothing. Nothing gets through, or most of it doesn't get through. Occasionally something does. It's more a surprise than anything else. They have no control over it. They have no clue what to do with it. They're Luddites and 5th century monsters. But in Tehran, the people pulling the strings, the people paying the bills, they don't really care either way. They're just like, we need people to be upset. We need people to be angry at somebody other than us. So we'll blame the Jews. It's the Hitler business model, still alive and well, scapegoating. Find a scapegoat for all of your problems, just like the Biden administration does with Donald Trump. It doesn't matter what it is. It's really bizarre. That's Donald Trump's fault. It's Donald Trump's fault. Inflation is what we inherited. It's Donald Trump's fault. Gas, none of it's true. None of it's remotely true. We can directly trace back the problems in the Biden administration to actions by the Biden administration. But it doesn't matter. They don't care. They just do it. And you go, who is the audience for this? And you realize, oh, it's stupid people. That's right. It's dumb people. There are a lot of dumb people out there who just gobble this stuff up. And you go, oh, okay. You think, what, is being stupid high calorie because we're so obese? Like, is that what's going on here? We're just eating what the Democrats are sending out to us? But it is incredibly dumb. And you just sit there and you go, this doesn't make any sense. Till you realize that they're not trying to convince people. You think they're broadcasting this stuff. It's very different. It's a difference between, I forget who it was, but somebody I knew in the radio business got really annoyed that people who did podcasts would say that they were broadcasters and that they were in radio. Like, it's not radio, it's different from radio. And it's not broadcasting, it's narrow casting. And they're right, definitionally. They're absolutely right. The narrow cast is you're shooting it right towards you who's listening, you know, in whatever portal you get. You have to actively seek this out. You can't stumble across it. There's no randomizer podcast player out there like there is on your radio where you can just go, all right, hit the seek button and you get 5 or 7 seconds or whatever it was on a particular channel and it just moves along. So broadcasting is you try and throw out, it's a difference between fly fishing, which is very specific, and just throwing a net out there to catch tuna and you pull up 15 dolphin. You know, that's the difference between the two. What these despotic regimes are doing around the world is for domestic consumption. They're broadcasting, very narrow casting. or they're not broadcasting, they're very narrow casting, to a very specific audience. They're trying to manipulate enough people to maintain power. In Iran, the mullahs and the religious zealots are a distinct minority. A distinct, a very, very, very tiny minority. But they're brutal. And they're willing to kill in order to maintain power. Now, they couch it differently. They say, well, it's in the name of religion, they're doing God's work. Well, I'm pretty sure that, you know, most religious texts are full of God smiting people. I'm pretty sure if God wanted somebody smote, God could handle it. God's the OG when it comes to that. But I don't think he needs a bunch of deputies. I'm too tired to God today. No, you're God. You're not too tired. But it's a whole bunch of people with a God complex, probably because their parents didn't love them enough or beat them too much or not enough, whatever it was. But they run around the countryside and they are perfectly willing. And history is replete with these people. It's just there's a ton of them who are happily brutal to other people because they've convinced themselves of the righteousness of their cause. I'm doing this for you. It's the same thing as an abusive parent. I'm doing this for your own good. Smack, smack. No, you're not. No, you're not. Now, a little discipline? Absolutely. Brutal attack? No. There's a line, and you cross it. And these people live on the other side of it. They like having the power. They'll never admit to liking having the power, but they like having the power. However righteous you start off, you cross that line pretty quickly, and there's no real coming back from it. I think it was Maximilian was the first name, Robespierre, in the French Revolution, started, you know, whipping up the crowds into a frenzy and beheading people. Yes, this is what they deserve, and he turned the crowd against a whole bunch of people, and then they turned on him. He whipped them into such a frenzy, it got out of control. Iran is desperately trying to maintain that. Well, I don't know how you get more extreme than Iran. And they disappear people all the time. So, you know, you replace your inner circle. You send them on. Hey, guess what? Congratulations. You're about to get 72 virgins. Really? Yeah. I mean, come on this way. We're talking to the wood chipper kind of thing. But Iran's audience is very specifically and explicitly the average Iranian. And you say, what do you mean by that, Derek? They're all oppressed by the regime, and they are. But just like the average American is getting screwed over by Joe Biden, the average American is paying $3.50 a gallon for gas. The average American is paying more for their food and their lodging than they ever have before, and more than they can almost afford. The average American is maxing out their credit cards and missing payments. The activists, the conservatives who see this, are like, this is crap, and we're pissed off about it. They are not going to be gotten. The liberals will go, you know what, this is all part of the plan or whatever, and it would have been worse under Trump or whatever they've convinced themselves as. The activist conservatives are already in the street. The activist liberals are already in the street. And they sort of maintain this balance a little bit, except for when it comes to their anti-Jew hatred on the left. It is trying to convince the vast majority, the giant swath in the middle of people to go, eh, whatever. That's why you see what the Biden administration is doing largely now. Is not, they've sort of stopped trying to convince people that you don't know how good you've got it. They recognize that, you know, that's just not the case. People aren't going to fall for that. People remember that long ago. They're trying to get people used to it. They're trying to get people used to it, to accept it. Once you accept your fate, once you stop fighting, once you stop struggling, then they've got you. Then they've got you. Then the election becomes about something other than the actions of this administration. It becomes about your comfort level with the new normal. And quite frankly, human beings can become comfortable and used to a whole lot of things that are terrible, that are awful, that you never would in a million years think you'd become comfortable with or think are normal. But you do. You can. You can get horrible situations. Horrible situation you're stuck in. And then after a while, you kind of get used to it. You don't like it, but you can get used to it. That's what the Biden administration is trying to do. That's what the people in Tehran are trying to do. And every once in a while, the people of Tehran will do something. The leaders in Iran will do something that crosses the line that sort of stirs the giant swath in the middle. They will find a 20-year-old who posted a video on the internet of herself having fun outside of her home, having uncovered her head, smiling and dancing a little bit. Or somebody will protest. Why do I have to wear this hot scarf on my head? Because, you know, men can't control themselves at the sight of an attractive woman or something. And the Iranian religious police will come along and imprison them. They'll try them in essentially a kangaroo court and they'll execute them. And the whole world sees this. And they go, what the hell? Like, let this girl go. They'll say, no, we're not letting the girl go. She's been convicted and she's been sentenced to death. Like, you can't execute this girl. The world is going nuts. The people of Iran are going. And then they go, it doesn't matter. And they execute her. And you go, well, Derek, that kind of undercuts what you're saying a little bit. And it does a little bit, except for when you realize the big picture. The power as that be in Iran are more terrified of the fervent lunatics who are willing to kill a girl for not wearing a headscarf than they are the great masses who largely sleep and only wake up every once in a while when that religious fervor nut jobs kill a girl for not wearing a headscarf. So they let the religious zealots stir up the middle on occasion a little bit, knowing full well that if need be, they'll stomp them down, kill a bunch of people, and they don't like it. It's bad PR. It's bad for business. It hurts their bottom line. But if that's what they have to do to maintain power, that's what they have to do to maintain power. They are much more afraid of the zealots who would kill a girl for not wearing a headscarf than they are the millions of people who don't particularly like being oppressed, but largely are used to it. You see what I'm saying? So when Israel does something that kills an Iranian general at a military outpost, a terrorist leader, essentially a guy who's funding terrorism, who's in charge of organizing the terrorist groups that is that Iran funds, Iran had to respond. Not because the great unwashed masses cared. They didn't really. They probably were secretly like, yeah, good, jerk. But because the zealots who help keep them in power, the brown shirts, if you will, of Iran, demanded it. Because if they didn't respond, there was a chance that those brown shirts would look to the leadership and go, well, maybe you're not as committed to the cause as of Islam as you claim. So they had to strike back. Now Iran has been hit. Wasn't a massive attack. It was more a symbolic attack. It was also to demonstrate to Iran that Israel can actually hit Iran. Iran, before they get a nuke anyway, can just lob a whole bunch of things that direction, showed how weak actually Iran is. Israel was able to defend itself with the help of the U.S., with the help of Jordan, etc. But it was a nice reminder that, yeah, you can launch stuff at us, but we can hit you. We can hit you. So watch yourself. And in response to this attack, Iran has pretty much said that they consider the matter closed. They've gotten what they wanted for their domestic consumption. They've appeased their radicals. They've put the great unwashed, anybody who cared about national pride or just doesn't like Jews, they've been placated. Most people don't have an opinion on it one way or another. And so the purpose was served. They knew they'd have to get hit back. The hit back was not an egregious thing in their mind. They can hide it from their domestic population, but they can explain it to their radicals and pass it off as saying, well, now we'll focus again on funding our terror-aligned groups to attack Israel. It's kabuki theater. It's garbage. It is on the it's the same thing as you see on the floor of the House or the Senate or any really anywhere in any legislative body. My good friend, they don't like each other. They don't dislike each other in most cases. They just don't even think about each other. How many, if you work in a massive company, how many people do you actually know? The staffs interact much more often and more frequently and more in depth than the members do in most cases, unless you're from the same state or on the same committee. You really do not. My good friend, especially when they're, you can tell they obviously hate each other. So much of our politics is for show. And the stuff that isn't for show is so damaging. And I'd really rather have more of the show than the damage. But that's for another time. The Israelis have evened the scale in their mind for their domestic consumption since they weren't. If Iran hit, they launched 300 rockets and drones. If Iran had gotten through a lot of them and done some damage and killed anybody, let alone a lot of people, it'd be a different world today. But they didn't. Iran, not very strong militarily. The sanctions have crippled them. Were it not for two successive democratic administrations, Iran's economy may well, and their government may well have collapsed by now. It's another story for another day. So there you go. Now you know what's going on over there. They say that they're done with it for now, and everybody will go back to the way it was. All that talk of World War III was just a little bit premature. But again, just like everything else, that talk was designed specifically for specific audiences, not really based on reality. Everybody's manipulating everybody. I just want to make you aware of it. All of this stuff that is for internal consumption, for maintenance of power, whatever you want to call it, for absolute and total 100% manipulation. The normal person looks at it and goes, you're insane. What are you doing? We don't fall for it. But the rest of the public looks at this and goes, oh, yeah, this is part of the manipulation. This is part of the garbage. This is part of the lies, the web of lies. They throw so many things at you that you can't keep up with it, that you just kind of throw your hands up and go, all right, forget about it. I have this audio here. The woman's, I talked about her the other day. She is the new CEO of NPR. Her name is Catherine Marr. She came from Wikipedia, which, again, she had no background in journalism. Wikipedia is garbage. It's garbage in, it's garbage out. I say that. I don't have a Wikipedia page. I think technically if I requested one, I could qualify for one at this point. I'm cited in a bunch of Wikipedia pages, but there's no link to me because I don't have my own Wikipedia page. But I don't care enough to get a Wikipedia page. That being said, I'm sure if somebody went and started one, it would be full of a bunch of lies because it's a bunch of left-wing crap. But while she was running Wikipedia, she was talking about how they have so much diversity. So much diversity in their writers, their editors. There are certain people who are trusted editors. They're unpaid, which seems a little bit unfair for people who demand a massive increase in the minimum wage, but for everybody else because it's unfair. But whatever. If you've got a whole bunch of people dumb enough to volunteer to do your dirty work and you can profit off of it, you know, power to you. I wish I could come up with a way to do that. But the vast majority of people who write on Wikipedia who are the, quote, trusted editors are white men. God, we're the worst, aren't we? I mean, aside from the fact that we created civilization as we know it, all technology, medical advances, things like that. Other than that, we suck. We just suck. Ugh. The world, I invite every liberal to stop using things You notice they always play these stupid games about cultural appropriation, but they never want to take it to its logical conclusion, right? Somebody braids, there was somebody just a couple of weeks ago, some model or whatever, had braided their hair and put beads in their hair, long hair. They look like Bo Derek from 10. I think that's what they were trying to emulate. And like, this is causing an outrage because it's cultural appropriation. Yeah, it's why? Because I don't know why. I don't know where braiding beads into the hair first started. And honestly, I don't care. I don't think it's a particularly good look. And I would drive my, it would drive me nuts to have my head jangling every time I moved it around. I got pretty long hair right now. But I don't care either way. But the idea of cultural appropriation, it's always a one-way street. Some Kardashian gets dreadlocks, like, oh, can you believe this horrible cultural appropriation? Like, is there a limited number of dreadlocks out there or beads for hair? And these evil, evil white ladies are hoarding them all so as to deny non-white people the ability to do it? Or no, or is it just, you know, you can do whatever the hell you want and it's an unlimited supply. All you need is Aquanet and the will, and the patience and poor fashion sense. That seems to be more likely. But they just claim, oh, it's cultural appropriation. When I was writing my book, there was, I think it might have been UMass Amherst, some liberal university up in the Boston area. There's a whole bunch of universities up there on the western side of Massachusetts where I used to go to visit a girlfriend at Smith College. They were complaining that the cafeteria in their residence housing or whatever, dormitory, that they had Chinese food night. Chinese food night. But the cafeteria staff was Hispanic. It was therefore cultural appropriation to have Hispanic people cooking up Chinese food. When in reality, all they did is they got a shipment, they opened the box up, somebody decided the menu, and they're going to mix it up a little bit, probably thinking they were being inclusive. They took a bag out of a packed with dry ice box, opened it up, put it in a vat, heated it up, and then slopped it out on a plate for kids. That's it. It's not like there's a master chef back there going, this is no good, no good, get me more. No, it's not how the world works. I don't know what kind of way these people think the world works, but it doesn't come close to what it seems to be what they think in their head. But they were complaining, all these woke college students, this is cultural appropriation. I believe, if I remember correctly, the university caved, apologized, never going to do that again, whatever. Like, what does that mean? That if you want to have Chinese food at the dormitories, you have to then hire on a one-day-only basis a bunch of Chinese people to come in and make it? And then you go, you know what? I really like some shawarma. All right, well, clear out those Asian people, and let's get some Middle Easterners in there. No, you want this? We've got to fight. It's so stupid. But if you take it to its rational conclusion, does not mean it's a rational conclusion, but if you take it up to where it ends, where the stupidity ends, right next to Shel Silverstein's, where the sidewalk ends is where the stupidity ends. There's a giant cliff off which everybody falls, where you have this idea that you have to know the origins of whatever it is you like before you're able to use it, before you're able to like it. I don't know who made pants, but it's probably out of Europe. Why? Well, because out of Africa, it's too damn hot, right? It's just hot. Nobody wears pants there. Nobody wants, I mean, maybe now because you want to get bugs and you can make lighter material pants. But no, I don't know if there's a lot of sheep running around in the deserts of Africa. Be hot if they were, so they're probably not making a lot of things out of wool back in the day. So I would assume that evil Europeans came up with pants. I know that they got buttons and zippers. So does the rest of the world want to do without buttons and zippers? Probably not. Do you take it to the level of absurdity that you go, well, give me this kind of hat? This kind of hat. French get the berets. It's all theirs. They can have it. Nobody wants it anyway. But, you know, the sombrero. Again, I don't think there are that many people who want to rock a sombrero. Would like to be able to walk through a door without incident. But if that's where we're taking it, are we going to take it to the point where you've got your phone? Who made the phone? Who made the actual phone? That's Alexander Graham Bell. But does it count on the cell phone? He made a landline. Don't get started on medicine. Who came up with antibiotics? Don't Google it. If you're a race-baiting leftist, you'll be wildly disappointed and probably die prematurely. Actually, go ahead and Google it. No, that's terrible. But you get the point. At a certain point, it becomes absurd and obscene. Yet this is where so much of the progressive left lives. This is what they live for. I want to play you this clip from NPR's Catherine Marr. This is back again when she was working at Wikipedia, when she was running Wikipedia. She did a lot of Q&A. I want you to notice a couple of things. Listen to what she says. It's the Democratic Party platform, but it's delivered. Listen to how she says it. It is delivered in the most, I'm trying to think of a way to put this that isn't involved swearing. It's the most condescending cadence you could ever imagine. This is a very wealthy, privileged white woman who has no real accomplishments under her belt. She hasn't founded anything. She stumbled into things. She fell bass-ackwards into positions coming from money, using connections to get jobs for which she's not qualified. She's not qualified for the job as CEO at NPR. Think of what you will. She has no background in journalism. None whatsoever. She never even wrote for her high school newspaper. So yeah, what does she have there? She has the political agenda. That's it. She's willing to toe the line. She hates the right people. She supports the right policies. She can get the job. She's never edited anything. She's not even been a Wikipedia editor. She's just been the boss there, and that's not journalism. But listen to the condescending tone, and imagine this is what I think helped doom Hillary Clinton in 2016, aside from her being a corrupt, horrible person, is the way that she spoke. It's like she's talking to a bunch of not just regular first graders, but dumb first graders, or first graders she thinks are dumb, or maybe even like sixth graders, but she thinks they're first graders, or she's treating them like first graders. It is just the tone, the delivery is, I don't know how to describe it except to say that it's incredibly condescending. You'll know it when you hear it. And then on top of it, the asinine content of what she says about all this multicultural crap, and she's lamenting about who the vast majority of people are who write for Wikipedia is, and that means that they're not writing about the certain things, because you can only write about, if you're gay, if you're only writing about gay things, you have to be gay. If you're writing about, you couldn't possibly write about the history of the civil rights movement and not be black. You can't. It is incredibly stupid and wildly progressive. I'll just leave it at that.
For all my love for Wikipedia, I'm not here to sell you on its perfection. I do view it as pretty flawed. It is mostly accurate, yes, but it can also be inaccurate and incomplete at times. More importantly, though, it's as biased as we all are. As a source built on other sources, it reflects the world that we have built, and its emissions reflect the worlds that we could have lived. Its policies of sourcing offer preference to European models of reference to the written word, excluding, for example, oral traditions. It is famously written by men, about 80% of its contributors, which means that there's so much missing from the other half of the human experience, not just the other half, the inclusivity, the entirety of the human experience. It's not just that women and other non-binary and non-gender conforming individuals are missing from who writes Wikipedia. It also means that they're missing from the history and the experience of how society has been shaped and formed. And of course, it has been written by the victors, all of the peoples and countries and cultures that have historically not dominated our understanding of world history are also missing in many ways from the written word.
It makes my skin crawl hearing that. It's not just the content, the delivery drives me. I can't stand the delivery. I can't stand what she says either. There's too many white men. Hey, pay somebody to write that stuff. No. It excludes the non-written oral history. What the hell? How are you supposed to document that? Because here's a little bit of a hint for you, you airhead. Once you write it, it's written, right? It's no longer an oral history. And oral histories are, if you've ever played telephone, about as accurate as, well, actually a Wikipedia entry. So maybe they have a point there, or maybe they should merge the two. But again, it's that damned white people. They ruin everything. I don't know how these people live. Well, I do know how these people live. These people live very well on large salaries, oftentimes at taxpayer expense, as well as the case with NPR. And they live in places that you cannot access and in ways you cannot imagine. But you probably don't spend a lot of time thinking about them, but they obsess about you. Not because they want to improve your life, although they pretend to themselves that's the ultimate goal, but because they want to control your life. And if you stray from the thought plantation, if you dare escape to the north of independent thought and freedom, you become their enemy. It's the truth. It's the truth. I read it on Wikipedia. So I found just... because I was curious. I didn't find what Catherine Marr is making over there at NPR, but I found what her predecessor was making. This is from January 13th, 2022, but it's based off of data from 2020. See, nonprofits have to file. If you're ever curious and cynical and you want to be justified in your cynicism, if you want to know what people make at various charity organizations or nonprofits, as they say, each nonprofit group has to file what's called a Form 990. A Form 990 lets you know where the money goes, where the money comes from and where the money goes. Not all the money, but a lot of the money, the vast majority of their money, they have to show you. They're big donors, but they also have to show you who gets paid what? Not everybody. It's usually, I think it's limited to the top 10 executives, the highest 10 compensated people, whatever it is. Now, weirdly, some groups can omit this for various years, or there are ways to skirt it to a certain extent, but you can find it most of the time. The woman on TV that you see constantly, the Fellowship of Christians and Jews, where she's like, we're giving them matzah for the first time. It's like, I ate a carrot. It's the only carrot I ever had for the last 2 months. I eat a carrot. And you sit there and you go, God, this is terrible. Maybe you should give this woman a little bit more than a handful of crackers. And why'd you open the crackers? They're going to start getting stale. Why don't you let her do that and get her more carrots? Get her carrot seeds, something. I just out of curiosity, because they seemingly spend an ungodly amount of money advertising on particularly Fox News. So I looked it up, and I believe that woman who heads it makes almost $750,000. And I thought, you could buy a lot of carrots for $750,000. I don't want, nobody should be doing this, you know, for free. You got to live, but you got to live like, you know, the highest paid WNBA star ever? Do you have to live that well? Shouldn't at a certain point charitable work be a little bit charitable? I don't know. It's just something that sits wrong with. There's a whole bunch of stuff that just sits wrong with me that I can't fully articulate why it is. The people who make a ton of money off of religion, people who get rich off of the Word of God, annoys me too. The televangelists, the hip pastors, the Joel Osteens of the world, the people who are like, God wants me to have another private jet. Really? God wants you to have another private jet more than he wants that kid to eat? I don't know. I'm speculating that you might have misheard. Maybe the phone call dropped or broke up a little bit at the moment God was telling you his financial priorities. Just speculating. I don't think you need a 30,000 square foot home to be able to preach the Word of God. Not again, I don't want people to go hungry, But prime rib every night and truffles and all that every night is overcompensating a little too much in the other direction for my taste. So that's neither here nor there. I suppose we'll find out when we get to the pearly gates. And like, yeah, sorry, but yeah, no, it's only Joel Osteen is allowed in. Joel Osteen works the door now. Doubt it, but you never know. So executive compensation at NPR in the year 2020. This has only gone up, I promise you. That's how it works. That's how it works. A guy named Jarl. I don't, who names these kids? Jarl. I guess you got to give your kid a weird-ass name if you want them to either be a serial killer or a wildly successful business person. It sounds like he's somebody on the Upper West Side of Manhattan having cocktails, martinis, of course, and sipping them out and talking about the weekend in the Hamptons that just passed and what you'll do with the next one. Or somebody with three names. Jarl Earl Mon. Jarl Earl Mon was arraigned today on 16 counts of... No, so Jarl, J-A-R-L, Mon, M-O-N-H, is president and CEO. He got $599,502. $599,502. Couldn't we just... I don't know, open up the phone lines, do a pledge drive for the remaining $498 to just get him to a flat $600,000. How do you even settle on that number? Jonathan D. Hart, Chief Legal Officer and General Counsel, $528,502. Now, I'd remind you, the President of the United States makes $400,000. These people suckle the government teat. In fact, I'm not going to go through the whole list here. It's the 35 most highly compensated employees at NPR. This piece is the 33 most highly compensated employees received nearly $12 million in compensation. 17 of the 33 were men, while 16 were female. And they just based that off of there's no gender inclusion in the 990 form. They just did it by name. I don't know what the hell a Jarl is, but they did it by name in Google searches. So they probably searched a picture of Jarl and made assumptions. NPR paid for travel for companions. Isn't that nice? They're going on a business trip. Well, let's bring the family. The company will pick up. And in this case, the company is us. The company will pick it up. A residence for personal use or household alliances made gross up payments or tax indemnification, specifically reimbursed or relocated expenses to Nancy Barnes were grossed up to $34,451. They paid $35,000 to move somebody? They physically move her house? Reimbursement and relocation expenses of Noelle Lacharie of only $1,392. They just moved her down the block, apparently. You gotta love how generous these groups are with other people's money. It's wonderful. It's wonderful. It's gotta be great. They have 1,307 employees are compensated $167 million, which equates to an average compensation of $128,000. However, only 618 employees, 47% of the total employees, compared to 38% in 2018, received more than $100,000. See how that works? 38% of people who worked at NPR made over $100,000 just 2 years later. 2 years later, 47% of the employees received salaries and payments of over $100,000. Now, those are percentages, and I always point out that you control the internet measure, you control everything. So I want to point out that there were no mass layoffs in those 2 years. In fact, the workforce likely grew, but it at least stayed the same. So the gross pay went up. Now you could say, well, they fired 500 people, so of course the average salary went up because they didn't fire the people making a lot of money. Now, that would make sense in the private sector. This isn't the public sector. This is a tax-exempt nonprofit, 501c3. They have really nice headquarters down in Washington, D.C. They make a ton of money. They rake it in from and they get our tax dollars. Now, the vast majority of their operating budget is not our tax dollars, but it's enough. It's some, and that it's some is too much. And yet every time you do that, you're just pennies on the dollar. It's just pennies on the dollar. That's a little bit more than just pennies. It's a lot of pennies. You get pennies on the dollar from 150 million American taxpayers. That adds up to a lot of dollars. You can justify damn near anything if you slice it down to the individual. The left always goes, we're spending so much on national defense. The Pentagon's getting too much money. We need to cut the Pentagon and help the poor. Well, we're only spending about 40 cents per taxpayer on the national defense. Isn't it worth 40 cents? Then they immediately become accountants and go, no, we're spending $500 billion. But per person, it's only this amount of money. No. Then you say, all right, well, then let's get rid of NPR, too. No. We're only spending pennies. It's just pennies. Let's get rid of the funding for Planned Parenthood. They make a fortune. No. It's just pennies. Guess what dollars are made out of? I hate to break. Don't. Any Democrats listening, don't take a dollar out of your wallet and try and rip it up and look inside. It's, you know, never mind. But look at what dollars are made out of. Pennies. Now look at, again, about the 140, 150, 160 million taxpayers. And it's just a couple of pennies from each of them. Trust me when I tell you, you would be exceedingly happy with your salary, no matter what your job was, if you received just two pennies from every American taxpayer. In fact, if you receive, you would get tens or hundreds of millions of dollars, whatever it works out to. But I promise you, if you were a Democrat, the Democrat would be coming back the next year and go, you know what, we're going to need three pennies per taxpayer. We just can't get, look, we need to do it. And you go, all right, fine. And then the next year you plan on, you know what, we're going to plan in advance. We're going to give you five pennies from every taxpayer next year. And they go, ooh, goody. And then the time comes. Times are tough. Economy's in a bit of a downturn. And so you say, you know, we were going to give you five pennies per taxpayer dollar, because we gave you three this year. But times are tough. We're only going to be able to give you four pennies per American taxpayer, not five. Now, a normal human being would understand that four is greater than three, and therefore you're still receiving more money. But the way that Washington argues money and spending our money, and the way that Democrats talk about how government works, that penny difference is not thought of as, well, at least we're getting more because you're still getting it. No, it is billed by the media as draconian cuts. They are cutting. They are slashing the money from our budget. I don't know how we're going to survive. These are the people at NPR who perpetuate that myth, the people in the media who perpetuate that lie. You saw this back in the 1990s. And I'm just thinking about this now, but I think it's worth revisiting from time to time so people never forget. The Republican Party, for all its flaws, and it's got a lot of flaws, has for a very long time been talking about financial responsibility. They've been acting on it less, admittedly, but they have at least been talking about it. Democrats don't talk about it. To the extent that how are you going to pay for it, it's always, well, we're going to tax the rich. It's nebulous. Most people, even if you are rich, don't consider yourself rich. So it's always, oh, well, good, they're going to go after some other SOB, not me, and I get to reap the benefits from it. But Republicans talk about the need for reining in government spending. And they've talked about the need for reining in government spending for a very long time, back to Ronald Reagan. In the 1990s, Republicans were looking at the problems with Medicare and Social Security, and they are legion. And the Democrats immediately came out and said what? They're looking at cutting these programs. They're looking at cutting these programs. They want to destroy these programs. They want to privatize these programs. Scaring the hell out of people. Preventing any changes to these programs at all. And therefore kicking the can down the road and only making things worse. So when it comes, and it's not that far away, when it comes to the collapse of the Ponzi scheme of Social Security and the Medicare problem, which is significantly worse, just remember that while they haven't tried to address it in some time in any serious legislative way, there was a time in the 90s when Republicans were trying to reform Medicare to bring in some choice, to bring in some competition, and to empower individuals to make the best decisions for themselves. And in 2004, 2005, with George W. Bush, with Social Security, where they said, here, you should be able to choose, if you want, to take 2.5% of your money that we withhold for Social Security. You should be able to take just 2.5%, which ain't all that much, and you should be able to invest that in the stock market. Now, you can't spend it on cigarettes and beer. You can't use it for it. It's got to be for when you retire, but you get to play with it. You get to invest that money. And most importantly, if you die at 40, everything you paid normally and everything you paid into Social Security is gone. And the government's like, oh, good. We just got a buttload of money we don't have to pay out. And it's great. It's great. They get to keep your money. Your family gets a little bit of a death benefit. If your kids are under 18, they get a little bit of money. But it's never anywhere near what you would have gotten had you lived to, say, 95. It's nowhere near what you paid into it. What you would have gotten, hell, if you'd lived to 75. But they, the money that you would have been able to, if George W. Bush had his way, been able to invest in the stock market back in 2005 would be inheritable. It would be inheritable. And here's a dirty little secret, Democrats. They all said, oh, it's risky. You're playing Russian roulette with this money. You're putting people's retirements at risk. You're doing this, that, and the other thing. And they're like, how dumb do you think people are? The answer is really incredibly dumb. But that's just because they're used to hanging out with Democrats. And if that's your sample set, you're right. But the stock market back then was around 7,000. The stock market today is around 32,000, somewhere in there. Now, not everything would have been a winner. Not everybody would have put it all in Apple or Google or whatever. But some people would have, and if you'd bought into a high-growth mutual fund or whatever, you would have absolutely positively seen significant growth on that 2.5%. More importantly, and moreover, if you started putting 2.5% that's taken out of your paycheck anyway, that you never really see in the first place, so it's not, you don't really consider it part of your income, you start putting that in the stock market, then you start seeing, hey, this is doing pretty well. You might then take 1% or 2% of your money that you are seeing and putting that in the stock market as well, if you paid attention to it. Not everybody, very few people, but it doesn't matter. So there would have been even more wealth created for more people in that time frame, in addition to the inheritable 2.5% per year that would have grown, I don't know, what, to 400-500% since then? Democrats prevented you from doing that. Democrats prevented that from happening. Nancy Pelosi led the charge against George W. Bush's suggestion that we be allowed to invest, if we want to, and only if we want to, it is voluntary, a small percentage of our Social Security money in the stock market. In that same time, Nancy Pelosi, using her position, and of course, just the genius of her husband, because if you've ever seen Paul Pelosi speak, you think, my goodness, that man's brilliant. That's sarcasm dripping off of your ears, ladies and gentlemen. But somehow Paul Pelosi managed to trade stocks with, who knows, maybe Nancy talks in her sleep, with full knowledge of what the government would be doing to impact various markets and what have you, not to mention the fact that she, as leader of Democrats, was offered stock options, her husband was offered stock options, as he was hired to consult, quote unquote, for various businesses because of her position. You ever been offered a stock option? I've never been offered a stock option. It's weird how people get them and they're in positions of power and they get them. But Nancy Pelosi, over that time, went from a person of wealth. She was never going hungry. The D'Alessandro family had been grifting in Baltimore and Maryland for a long time. But she went from having some good wealth to being enormously wealthy, hundreds of millions of dollars. From, wait for it, here's the punchline, from investing in stocks, from investing in the stock market. Granted, she had insider information, which would be illegal if you had used it, but as a member of Congress, she's allowed to use it. Her husband, they couch it under the husband, but they're allowed to use it. They set the rules for themselves. So many, many Democrats, many, many members of Congress have gotten fabulously wealthy. Fabulously wealthy. Over those, what are we looking at, 20 years? Since George W. Bush suggested people be allowed to put just a little bit of their money in the stock market? And Democrats blocked it. And yet those Democrats got filthy rich over that same time period by doing just that, putting money in the stock market. That hypocritical isn't a strong enough word. Corrupt isn't a strong enough word. Progressive might be, but don't know. I want to shift it up a little bit here and just talk about the god-awful women of The View. Joy Behar is... How do you describe Joy Behar? Unfortunate, I guess would be the word. Just unfortunate. Now, she's also a testament to the greatness of America. And all of the women on The View are actually testaments to the greatness of America, as are most of media, most celebrities, most athletes. They are testaments to the greatness of America. Now, what do I mean by that? Because they seem to hate America. Yeah, putting that aside, these are people who, in a society that doesn't allow for... Well, we're so good that even talentless hacks can make it. You know, that's the beauty of America, is you can go as far as your ambition is. Talent matters a lot, but talent doesn't always matter. It's not the only factor. The fact that any of these women on The View have jobs is, only in America. These people would be working in the mines. They'd be, you know, expendable in the old Soviet Union. You just look at them and go, they bring nothing to the table. Nothing of value to society to the table. Well, in the United States, the greatness of America is you don't have to necessarily, you just have to have people who are, you attract an audience. Now, that's part of the destruction of our culture, is just get an audience. It doesn't matter how you do it. Just get attention. But the ladies on The View and The View, it couldn't happen anyplace else. Not to the degree that it does, because people would look at it and go, what? No, this is garbage. Whereas here, where we have, thanks to American freedom and Americanism, we've managed to conquer a large chunk of our worthlessness, a large chunk of our problems. And that allows for worthlessness to come and creep in, the frivolity, the ridiculousness, the absurdity of making up problems, of sitting around and going, yeah, we're all too fat, but this country's horrible. Like, nobody's going hungry, but this country's horrible. Yeah, no, not everybody has health care. You're right, not everybody does have health care, but nobody can be turned away from an emergency room. It doesn't matter if they can afford to pay for it or not. If they can't afford to pay for it, we have a safety net to take care of it. Oh, no, it's different. Everybody should have that. Okay. Well, I promise you the ladies in the View have really good health care. They have really good health insurance. Give that up. Go on, buy into Medicaid. All right? Go, you're in New York. You can probably get on Medicaid with making, you know, several million dollars a year or whatever. Get a politician in New York to pass a law that says that rich ladies can buy into Medicaid. And do it. Lead by example. They'll never do that. They will never do that. Never. They've got ABC News, ABC the company. They've got the best health insurance in the world. You think you got it pretty good with your union, Blue Cross or whatever? No, you don't know nothing about the golden velvet plans that the ladies on The View have. And it's weird because they're all for equality, but I promise you the dude working the camera doesn't have that same plan. Promise you, the sucker whose job it is to write the cue cards out, union member, doesn't have the same plan that ABC News. These are the executive plans that they get. It is primo. It is worthy of a chef's kiss. It's just this side of being a multi-billionaire and being able to pay cash for your health care. Right? It doesn't, you know, sit there and go, rich people, I probably don't know this, but rich people generally don't buy health insurance. Why? Because they can just cut a check. Actually, they just reach into their pocket. You can shake out their pocket and go, here you go. Here's the money you need. And guess what? You get cuts to the front of the line. All these rich people, they get cuts to the front of the line. That's beside the point, though. You know, they do, to the extent that it's affordable, make it so for us through their payments. But that's for another story. I can get into health insurance, and you don't want that. It'd be boring. There's no way to spend a day. But these vapid vessels pollute the culture. A good person wouldn't be able to do it. A good person would hammer the check for a while, but sooner or later it would get to them. They go, I just can't. It's too hollow. It's too empty. I have to go and do something. Or I'm going to take the money and run. I have enough money. I don't have to work again. But I can't keep doing this for more money than I need because I feel dirty doing it. Now, what do I mean? Well, I mean a lot of things when talking about the ladies at The View. But in particular, Joy Behar was talking to Jennifer Granholm. Let me ask you this. Can you remember a time in your life when cabinet secretaries were guests, sought-after guests on various talk shows? I don't know that there is a cabinet secretary that hasn't been, you know, slobbered on by Stephen Colbert. The ladies on The View get all of the, Secretary Jennifer Granholm, former governor of Michigan, former professor out at UC Berkeley, I think it was, because she had to go as far away in the continental United States as she possibly could after being a governor of Michigan to find a job because she'd done such a poor job in Michigan for the economy that even the universities didn't want to hire her there. She went out there. She made a bunch of money on spec. You know, she's hired as a consultant for an electric vehicle company. Why? Because she was governor of Michigan. That has nothing to do with it. The governor of Michigan has no idea what goes into auto manufacturing. She didn't know. It was because they knew that she wasn't done in Democratic Party politics. They knew that she was what's viewed as a rising star. They knew she couldn't be president of the United States because she was born in Canada, born Canadian. But they figured she'd end up somewhere in an administration in the future, and they were right. So they gave her, I think it was $5 million in stock options. There's no stock options again. How many stock options have you gotten? She got millions of dollars in stock options from an electric vehicle company out in California. She had to sell them. She had to exercise them. She had to take the money. She was hoping they'd become worth more before she cashed them in and had to pay taxes on them. But, you know, duty calls. I guess, you know, $5 million less taxes in hand is worth more than $10 million on spec. So she made her money. Because the electric vehicle company said, she's probably going to end up in a cabinet somewhere down the line. Everybody knew it. If a Democrat won, she would be somebody they'd come and tap on their shoulder. And it didn't matter, since the left makes everything about so-called green energy and the Green New Deal and blah, blah, blah. They want to regulate the hell out of anything. It didn't matter what department she ended up in. Having $5 million worth of favor from Secretary Granholm is all that matters. Secretary of what doesn't? If she's at state, they go, oh, well, she's going to lobby other countries on our behalf to make sure that they buy our cars and push towards green whatever. And like, okay, what if she's Secretary of Health and Human Services? Well, they've got hospitals need battery backups. Electric vehicles run on batteries. You create battery technology. They can mandate that hospitals use such our batteries and whatever, favor them, shine the light of favor on us. It doesn't matter. This is how government works. You don't have to be directly involved. You don't have to be the obvious choice. You don't have to be the obvious position for there to be a financial benefit to you. That's why Jennifer Granholm, who had no qualifications in the auto industry whatsoever, gets $5 million in stock options and you don't. Perfectly legal corruption. So Jennifer Granholm as Secretary of Energy, I mean, they hit the jackpot when they gave her that $5 bucks. That is, that's like hitting the lottery and then hitting the double button on top of it, and you just doubled everything. They made the right bet. It's like putting all your chips on double zero. Everybody looks at you like, crazy, that's not going to come. And it hits. Red or black, not green. No, no, trust me. Well, she was on The View for no good reason. She's not pushing a book. She's there because she's a cabinet secretary, which again strikes me as incredibly odd. I don't remember Johnny Carson going, ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Secretary of State George Shultz tonight on the show. Like, I think everybody in the audience would go, what the hell? What is this? Where's Carnac? We came here for something. Jay Leno never brought out Robert Reich, even in the Clinton years. But since Joe Biden is uniquely bad as president and incapable of doing media himself, they have to throw out the cabinet secretaries. Notice how they're barely throwing out, and it has to be super safe. They're barely throwing out the vice president. Have you noticed that? Poor Kamala. Just full of all the hope in the world. Like a kid waiting for the ice cream truck and everything. That bit of the noise that comes down the street. Is that the ice cream truck? It's not the ice cream truck. And the ice cream truck never comes. They put her on some ridiculous podcast where it's just the most insane thing ever. And they put her occasionally on The View, but they don't roll her out all that often because she's less popular than Joe. The more people see of Joe, the more people realize he's senile. The more people see of Kamala, the more people realize, oh my God, this is their choice for Plan B? So they're all kind of screwed. So they're sending out cabinet secretaries as celebrities. They're not celebrities with normal people, but they are celebrities with the ladies of The View and Stephen Colbert's of the world. Look, anybody less funny than Stephen Colbert, which is, you know, not that many people, makes Stephen Colbert look better. So he's happy to have them on there. Senators, whatever. Anyway, Granholm is on with The View, and Joy Behar talks about climate change, of course, because you're dealing with the energy secretary. Joy Behar doesn't have a damn clue what she's talking about, which is sad at some, you know, when you know she's got a staff that preps her or could prep her for an interview, and they don't, either they go, you don't need to know these facts, and she's content with that, or she doesn't want to know. She's just happily swallows whatever the talking point is without question. But she says something about Donald Trump and Joe Biden and grandchildren, which stuck in my craw. It is so typical of the left to they just declare things to be without evidence. They only speak to themselves and people like them, so there is no need for evidence. And everybody nods in agreement and goes, oh, yeah, no, this is great how it is. So what am I talking about? Let's listen to Joy Behar talk about how Biden loves his grandkids, but Donald Trump doesn't.
Okay, so while President Biden, who cares about his grandchildren,
yes,
is working very hard on this, as you just pointed out, he has record climate investments. Former president, he can't even say it, Trump, he says he would be a dictator on day one and drill, drill, drill. You know, he couldn't care less about his grandchildren.
He couldn't care less about his grandchildren, but Joe Biden loves his grandchildren. Joe Biden loves, except for one of them. It's weird. Donald Trump acknowledges all of his grandchildren. Donald Trump acknowledges all of his grandchildren and by all accounts loves them. If he didn't, you would have heard about it. But Joe Biden hangs 6 stockings with care in the White House when it comes Christmas time, and he has 7 grandchildren. He acknowledges his 6 grandchildren. He weirdly talked a month ago about how his favorite part of being president is when his grandchildren come running into the bedroom in the White House on Saturday mornings and they snuggle in bed with grandpa. And you're like, Most of his grandchildren are grown adults. They're like above 20 years old. Joe Biden is exceedingly old. The youngest grandchild is Hunter's. Well, there's 2 of them that are young, but only one that Biden acknowledges, who's like 5 or 6 years old. Grant, maybe you can have that kid snuggle in, but left unsaid was the fact that his degenerate, crack-addled, adulterous, prostitute-loving son lives with him at the White House with his kids. We're putting him up. The White House is the ultimate flop house. But a guy who loves his grandchildren doesn't acknowledge one of them. I don't know if the ladies, and there was 6 women of on the View panel there, the 5 harpies who are in the pay of ABC News, and then Jennifer Granholm isn't going to say, well, you know what, there's this little thing about my bosses. He sucks. He's a horrible grandpa, doesn't acknowledge his one kid, never once spoke to this kid. I give you my word as a Biden that this kid doesn't register as a Biden. But if you get in the Wayback Machine, finally, this kid was 4 years old at the time, which means the kid was born in 2019. But on August 2nd of 2023, NBC News headline, Biden acknowledges his 7th granddaughter after getting the green light from his son. Imagine. You're basing your ability, your willingness to do what is right by a 4-year-old child on what your crack-smoking son says is over. Give him the green light. Yeah, okay, fine, you can acknowledge them in a written statement only one time and never again. And that's what they did. In recent weeks, President Joe Biden realized that his silence was no longer tenable. It was time for him to publicly recognize his 4-year-old granddaughter caught up in a bitter child support case involving his son, Hunter Biden. People familiar with the matter said. Yes, he's riddled with guilt. Not to tell his son to pay the damn child support and be a part of this kid's life because you've already damaged the kid enough with your lifestyle. Nope. It's just a child support case. It's just a bill. Pay your bill, son. Before he could do so, he wanted to take one final step, getting the green light from his son, which he received last week, one source said. Isn't it lovely? Oh, can I talk about this? I don't know. Dragging your feet. Kid's not getting any younger. Okay, fine. Go ahead. They're awful people. They truly are awful people. And on Friday, Biden finally spoke out about his 7th grandchild, whom for years he wouldn't so much as acknowledge in public. Now the president wants to meet little Navy Joan Roberts. Never has. He wants to meet him, the sources said. Yeah, he definitely wants to. Family dramas typically play out in private, though rarely when the nation's first family is involved. A president who has wrapped himself in family throughout his career is now, in an improbable twist, having to explain why he publicly ghosted a young girl who is as much his grandchild as any of the others whose high school graduations he attends or who playfully call him Pop. This is a slobbering embarrassment to human existence as a puff piece, but at least NBC News wrote it. See, Joe wanted to acknowledge it, but he wouldn't want to offend his son. Oh, you mean the son who left his wife to sleep with his sister-in-law and then cheated on her with a bunch of strippers and ended up having this kid? That guy? The guy who, you know, it's made a whole bunch of money in positions that he had no business knowing, embarrassed the family politically, but made the family a ton of money. Really, maybe that's why Joe is so sensitive to it. You don't want to piss off the bank in the family. Since we're talking about The View and how awful the ladies on The View are, I that bit about Donald Trump doesn't care about his grandchildren. Ugh, can you imagine being Joy Behar's grandchild? Having to go to school when... Your grandma, she's pretty stupid, right? I just don't want to talk about her. No, but she's terrible. She always insists on kissing me on the lips. It's just one of those things I'm trying to look up. She's got one kid, I guess. Eve Behar. At least if Google is to be deserved. At least one of the kids matters. I don't know. I can't imagine she talks to her. But... Yeah, that's it. Let's see. Yeah, I think she's got one kid. They have one daughter. And a grandson. Ugh, poor bastard. But anyway, the ladies on The View were... Joy was not done. Because you want to talk about how liberals work. This is more... Who liberals are is what was just covered in that first clip. Donald Trump doesn't care about his grandchildren, but Joe Biden does, even though... Joe Biden doesn't acknowledge one of his grandkids. And Donald Trump acknowledges all of his grandkids, has them over place. You know, they're around all the time. Gets along with all his... Say what you will about Donald Trump. You can tell a lot about a person by a couple things. Is if they're, especially the wealthy, the fabulously wealthy people. There's usually a lot of animosity. It was the whole basis of the show Succession, where you're sitting there and you're going, God, these people are terrible and they hate their father and they hate this, that, and the other thing. And there's a lot of, they're all jealous of each other. They don't speak except with, you know, through lawyers and whatever, and they're fighting over family trust. Donald Trump's kids talk to him. They like him. They work with him, except for Ivana, I guess, or Ivanka. They work with them. You have to really like somebody to want to be around them that much, don't you? Joe Biden's kid, where is... I mean, they're around. Hunter's around because he's got nowhere to live. If he can no longer, on the sly, the jig is up, sell the Biden family name and cash in on that, then what is he left to do? Survive on merit? Who goes, you know what? We need a lawyer. Well, we could go with a reputable firm in town that handles cases of this nature regularly and has a pretty good success rate. Or, and I pose this to you, think outside the box for a second, or we could go with this guy who is a noted crack addict, who never really practiced litigation, not law in the way you'd think about it, all that much, who got all kinds of problems, personal problems, tax problems. We could go with him. Which way do you want to go? Nobody's going to say, well, let's think about it over the weekend, because both of those options seem gangbusters. No. No. So Hunter Biden left to his laurels. You can see, well, if he falls back on his education, that leads him to painting by numbers and selling them to one filthy rich leftist donor who also paid his tax burden and a bunch of foreign people. And you go, huh, that doesn't seem like a big growth market, except for you realize it's because his dad is president of the United States. And then suddenly he goes, oh, yes, the light goes on. I got it now. That's why he makes money. If he could make it as a lawyer, he'd be making it as a lawyer, right? So they've got nothing left to sell. The Biden family's not... The Biden family's close in a way that people keep others, associates close, because to get rid of them might mean a lawsuit, or there could be a point at which everything goes sideways and the police are involved and you need to keep this person close to keep them on the same page with you. That's how they're close. So as the ladies in the View sit there and talk about, oh, this is just a wonderful time, remember that the Trump family actually likes each other. The Biden family probably fears each other. Plus, Pops there is the only one who hasn't blown through all his money like a drunken sailor or, you know, a cracked out idiot in a whorehouse. So if you want to be in the will, you better not only keep your mouth shut, you better keep in the good graces of Daddy. With that being said, we'll get back to The View. The ladies at The View, Joy in particular, talking to the Secretary of Energy, immediately goes into, after attacking Donald Trump about not loving his grandkids, not caring about his grandkids, gets into climate change. Republicans, we pesky, rascally rabbit Republicans simply do not believe in climate change. And that's a problem somehow. Now, note that Joy wholeheartedly believes in climate change. She unquestioningly believes in climate change. And part of that lack of questioning is the fact that she doesn't know what the hell she's talking about. I guarantee you, you have a conversation with her on the topic, her knowledge would be exhausted after the word hello. It is in the nature of the left to embrace authority as long as it is exercised against the people they don't like, against the people who disagree with them. They will absolutely, positively embrace authority every single time if the alternative is a conservative. They have no set principles, whereas, you know, they'll go, we need speech codes. There's too much hate speech out there. And then you point out, from the river to the sea, Palestine will be free. Kill all Zionists. Like, that's pretty genocidal talk. And they go, yeah, you know, they need free speech. And if you go, hey, you know what? I don't really care for the fact that I had to pay $100 at the grocery store today. Well, you're obviously spreading hate speech. You're against Democrats who need to be silenced. They want to impose speech codes under the guise of hate. It's just only as long as they get to decide what hate is. Whereas conservatives go, no, there's no speech codes. There's no laws against hate speech. There's horrible, horrible things that are said on The View are stupid, and I wouldn't frequent or patronize a company that advertised on them, but they shouldn't be prevented from saying it. They shouldn't, unless the market dictates it, they should not by government fiat be facing jail time because they said something stupid. They should be facing humiliation, but not government. Government has no business in that. You never get that from Democrats. They want to shut down Fox News. They want to shut down talk radio because they are fascists. They also know that when the full airing of ideals and ideas has happened and the public is informed, they lose every single time. If they had the truth on their side, they wouldn't have to lie so damned much. Anyway, we're straying there, getting a little preachy. Let us get back to Joy Behar. Notice the obedience and fealty with which she defers to the Secretary of Energy. And notice how there is absolutely no discussion to back up her claims. There is no, she brings nothing to the table other than climate change is real and Republicans won't believe it. Okay, there's no proof. There's nothing. You don't need proof. If your choir that you're preaching to is a bunch of bobbleheads on a wobbly dashboard in a car without any spring or any shocks left going down a bumpy road, you're going to get an amen no matter what you do. Everybody's going to nod in agreement. And that's what The View is.
And he spreads conspiracy theories that wind turbines are killing whales and causing cancer. Here's the problem that makes me nuts. A new Washington Post poll shows that nearly half of Republicans now believe Trump, that climate change is a hoax. How much more evidence do these people need when they see what goes on with hurricanes, etc.?
Yeah.
How do we convince these people to start believing the truth?
Yeah. How much more evidence do these people need when we see what goes on with hurricanes, etc.? What's going on with hurricanes? I would love to just sit down with Joy. What's going on with hurricanes? Well, they're stronger and they're more frequent, but they're not. They're not. There's no, well, and destruction. Yes, of course. The more, they cost more money. Yes, they do. Now, again, this is the prime example. Hurricanes, just a prime example as I'm thinking about it right now. A prime example of how the unit of measure, controlling the unit of measure really, truly matters. You talk about hurricanes. They're getting more expensive because they're not getting more powerful. They're not. We were promised after Katrina that it would be more often and more dangerous and blah, blah, blah. And we didn't have a hurricane hit the continental United States for like 15 years. 15 years. It was nothing. And we've had a couple of strong hurricanes, but mostly they've been weak hurricanes and they haven't been hitting the United States. They haven't really been hitting anywhere. There's devastation in third world countries in the Caribbean because you fart too hard in a building over there and there's a 70% chance it will collapse. That's the problem with the third world. But to say that hurricanes, they're causing more damage, they're causing more this, they're causing more that. Okay. Go to Florida now, and there's a lot of people. And one of the booming, there's a lot of booming real estate across the country, but one of the biggest booming real estate markets is oceanfront property, of which Florida has a lot. I don't know if it has the most. I think technically Alaska probably has the most. Maybe California has a little bit more, but they have a lot of oceanfront property, if you recognize that the Gulf is part of an ocean. Salt water, same thing. They have a lot of waterfront property, I'll say. They're building a lot of expensive properties on that waterfront property. They're building high-rises in there. They're building all the infrastructure and buildings around cities and everything that go along with those sorts of things. There are floodplains, natural floodplains that people build on. Because they're filthy rich. If you can afford to spend $10 million on a plot of land and another $40 million building a house, you can afford either the insurance or to go, I don't need insurance, I'll just build it up, or I'll pay for it, or I'll put whatever. That all causes, those all can be potentially damaged. But you also need people around there to work there, the restaurants, the stores, the things that naturally pop up around where cities begin. That means more people have moved to Florida, believe it or not. Yes, not just in the last, it's not a new phenomenon in the last couple of years. People have fled to Florida because of COVID. People have been going and moving to Florida for a very long time. The population has increased dramatically. So if you're going to compare hurricane damage and the costs associated with hurricane damage from the 1950s, 60s, and 70s, and even the 80s to today, guess what's going to happen? It's going to cost more. You don't really talk about deaths. There used to be a lot more deaths. But the costs have necessarily gone up because things cost more. The costs have necessarily gone up because people are building more expensive properties. The costs have necessarily gone up because there are more people down there. More people means more housing units, means more buildings that can be damaged. It just makes common sense to base economic policy on this level of ridiculous, irrelevant data is incredibly stupid. And then to say, and we need to do it now because in 100 years things will be worse, is borderline criminal. It's so stupid. But that's what these people do. In 100 years, Joy Behar will not be remembered. In 100 years, Joy Behar's ancestors, they might still be dining out on some of the money that she made, but they won't understand the pure idiocy that she brought. They might notice that if the philosophy of Joy Behar wins, that they aren't as free as it seems like the stories of the olden days were, but that would be about it. Hurricanes will not be stronger. More damage will be happening in Florida because there will still be more people there. People building in floodplains. I love how they, oh, massive flood. You mean in the floodplain? you know, understand what the floodplain? Oh, look at these massive tornadoes. Yeah, you mean the tornadoes that are happening in, what do they call it? Tornado Alley? Yeah, there's nothing new under the sun. The only thing that's new is the arrogance of human beings to believe that we not only caused it, but we can control it. Right? We used to have a book in our family. I don't know where it is now. I might have it in a box in my basement, but I don't remember. It was seemingly written in the 60s, but it was weird to declare it was like the worst disasters of the 20th century, which in the 60s or 70s seemed a little premature to be declaring the worst disasters of it. But if you go through it, there were a lot of horrible things that happened and massively destructive things that happened from nature, floods, hurricanes, wildfires, earthquakes, you name it. In the first two-thirds of the 20th century, long before the advent of the SUV. By the way, the advent of the SUV sort of coincided with the advent of the catalytic converter, and came after the catalytic converter, removing lead from gasoline, making cleaner burning fuel. There's very little pollution that actually comes from the modern internal combustion engine, but that's beside the point. Not everything's a lawnmower from 1940 that if you sit there in the garage for 5 minutes, there's a good chance you're going to pass out. But it doesn't matter. Reality doesn't matter to these people. The agenda matters. And there are so many people like Joy Behar sucking up to somebody like Jennifer Granholm who just accept things unquestioningly. Don't accept things. Don't accept what I say unquestioningly. Don't accept what anybody says unquestioningly. I hope you use whatever it is you hear from wherever it is you hear it as a leaping off point where you can go, all right, I'm going to look into that a little bit. That's new to me. That's different. Is that true? I want to check if that's true. And then go and look if it's true. You will not get that on the left. You get 5-second clips. The View will give you a 5-second clip, or they'll give you the bastardized version, performance art reenactment of Whoopi Goldberg trying to convince you that Donald Trump pushed old ladies down a flight of stairs or something like that. No, it's true. It's true. Like, well, if it's true, prove it. We don't have to. We just declare it to be. We're the Dorothy of politics. We click our heels together 3 times and repeat a lie, and it becomes accepted truth in the hive mind. It would be funny. I want to shift a little bit because I saw this story. Let me see if I can find it. About abortion. And it, like, oh my goodness, it's designed. Yeah, here it is. Associated Press. It is designed expressly for the purpose of trying to outrage Democrats to try and get them to care about and vote on abortion. It is wildly misleading. Emergency room refuses to treat pregnant woman, leaving one to miscarry in a lobby restroom. My God, what the hell is going on? One woman miscarried in the restroom in the lobby of a Texas emergency room as front desk staff refused to admit her. Another woman learned that her fetus had no heartbeat at a Florida hospital the day after a security guard turned her away from the facility. And in North Carolina, a woman gave birth in a car after an emergency room couldn't offer an ultrasound. The baby later died. Now, they all try and impose, and if you read this and imply, that this has to do with the Dobbs decision being overrun. This has to do with Donald Trump. This has to do with et cetera, Republicans and abortion. None of these women were seeking an abortion. They miscarried. They had horrible things, and they came across really bad medical care. Really bad medical care. You can get really bad medical care anywhere. But these are not hospitals that they went to. These are emergency rooms. These were urgent care clinics. The one that refused to give him an ultrasound, I don't believe they had ultrasound equipment. It's not, I don't know if you can go to an urgent care and just get an ultrasound. Not very often. They have to have it. You can't go to some urgent cares and get an x-ray because they don't have it. They send you somewhere to get an x-ray. But you have to read well into this story. before, because they've got even a subheadline, pregnancy care after Roe. It has nothing to do with pregnancy care after Roe. It has to do with shoddy service and bad care. It also has to do with a lot of places not being able to afford to provide services and don't provide services and turn people away because it is incredibly expensive to provide prenatal care. Not because the procedures are particularly expensive, but if you do that, if you are a doctor who delivers babies, your medical malpractice insurance is astronomical. You can thank a Democrat for that. So this story, which is couched as, and it's a very long story, is some sort of parable about what those evil Republicans have done to women. It's garbage. It's garbage. Speaking of garbage, let's go to Elizabeth Warren, the United States Senator from Massachusetts and the Navajo Reservation. She's so white, her camouflage in a snowstorm is nudity, but nobody wants to see that. So, you know, viva la climate change. Bring on that global warming so we don't have to deal with that. She released a video on her social media the other day attacking Apple as a monopoly. I don't know if she understands how, if she's any better at understanding how monopolies work than she is in understanding how DNA works. But like a good Democrat, she never lets the facts stand in the way of a good story.
Green techs on iPhones, they're ruining relationships. That's right. Non-iPhone users everywhere are being excluded from group texts, from sports teams chats to birthday chats to vacation plan chats. They're getting cut out, missing out on plans and conversations. And who's to blame here? Apple. That's just one of the dirty tactics that Apple uses to keep a stranglehold on the smartphone market. Apple has used its monopoly on smartphones to lock Americans into services and amass billions of dollars in profits. Apple even takes a cut every time you use Tap to Pay and has blocked a new app that would have let Android users finally use iMessage and get those blue texts. That's why last month the Department of Justice sued Apple for its broad-based exclusionary conduct. And that's the right thing to do. It's time to break up Apple's monopoly now.
I believe she's got her colors wrong. The green techs are the ones that come in through Apple, but I have family members who are not Apple users. We get all the group texts. I don't know what the hell she's talking about, but can you imagine? This is your priority as a United States senator? Country's going broke, country's being invaded, and she's, we're going to break up Apple. So just for fun, since the internet exists and she's making some pretty declarative statements there about the monopolistic power of Apple, I looked it up. Monopoly power. Throughout 2023, Apple had about, 21, the first quarter, 21%, 17%, second quarter, 16%, third quarter, 23%, the fourth quarter. That averages out to about 20% of the cell phone market. Apple, the iPhone did. That's not a monopoly. I hate to break it to her, but that's 20% is not a monopoly when 80% is the rest of the market. And roughly the same number, about 19%, is Google, is the Android, Samsung. So you're going to whine and complain the operating systems, you want to talk monopolistic power. iOS is not the monopoly, it is Android. But you can't expect Pocahontas to be honest, because the truth doesn't help Democrats. Lastly, just really quickly, Representative Ilhan Omar's daughter is suspended in those Columbia protests, and she's been suspended. She was arrested. Isra Hirisi, the daughter, I don't know which marriage, not the current marriage, but not maybe probably not the brother marriage, probably her first marriage. But I do love it that she's getting suspended. She may end up getting expelled. She probably should. The apple doesn't rot far from the tree, ladies and gentlemen. And anti-Semitic parents, pass on hate. Don't you love these people? Oh, hate, we must stamp out hate. Physician, heal thyself. Starts in the home there, Ilhan. Maybe stop spreading hate at home. All right, that is enough for today, ladies and gentlemen. Go about your business. It's Monday. Let's Pour one out for poor, sweet, nourishing little terrorist daughter there, Ilhan Omar's daughter. She's just, God, sometimes karma is good. Anyway, have a great weekend, or have a great week, a great Monday. We'll be back to do it again tomorrow. Get your entries in for the book signing, for the signed book. See you tomorrow.